Welcome to Steppin' Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon.
Everybody, my name's Sue Supriano, and my guests today are Oren Langell and Ann Peterman. They are from the Action for Community and Ecology in the Regions of Central America, which is based in Burlington, Vermont. So they're just passing through the San Francisco Bay Area here. And you particularly wanted to tell me, Ann and Oren, about Plan Panama. Is that the right name of it?
Plan Puebla Panama. And it was proposed earlier this year. It was announced by President Fox of Mexico. One thing that we have been noticing by working in the Central American region for quite some time were a lot of different development projects that were going on. But what Fox has did, he put a name to it. So now we're able to say Plan Puebla Panama, and more people understand what we're talking about. And people throughout the region now are starting to understand that these plans are all interconnected. Specifically, what's been going on prior that we've seen is that the Panama Canal is silting up, and there's a huge amount of traffic in the Panama Canal. So different countries were making proposals of running dry canals through their countries. Nicaragua, in Mexico, in the Isthmus of Tehuantepec, also Colombia.
What's a dry canal?
A dry canal is basically you'll have ports on each side of the isthmus, deep, huge water ports where container ships can get in, go into and unload their goods. They unload their goods in these ports, and then the dry canal is essentially a high-speed railroad to the other port, and it's a high-speed railroad, also sometimes super highways. So goods coming in from China and the Far East can then go to these ports, be unloaded, shipped really quickly to the other side, and then other ships can take them to ports such as New Orleans, New York, Boston, or Western Europe.
And what is the situation with the Panama Canal? I should know, but didn't it get given back to Panama?
Yeah, it was returned to Panama. That was one issue the United States has with the Panama Canal. Another thing is that both of the ports at this point are owned by a Chinese multinational, which is another thing the United States isn't particularly fond about. And the fact that it's filling up with silt, so it's very difficult for ships to get through. The largest ships can no longer get through at all. There's a 14 or more day wait to get through the canal. And as I mentioned, it's becoming very filled up with silt because they've deforested all along it, in their typical not thinking ahead. They deforested and now they're ruining the canal. So they need alternatives, and that's why these dry canals have been proposed in Nicaragua. Two different proposals are being looked at in Mexico's Isthmus of Tehuantepec. There's a canal being proposed across Honduras and Guatemala and El Salvador. One through Costa Rica, one through Colombia, and a railroad through Panama. So these are all different projects that are being looked at for dry canals. Mm-hmm. The one in the Isthmus of Tehuantepec appears to be the most furthest advanced at this point.
And the consequences of these dry canals will be very bad for the environment and for the people.
Yes, extremely bad for the environment, because if you look at a lot of people will say, well, it's just a small little rail line that's going to go through, but it's a lot more than that. Once you start building that kind of an infrastructure, there will be development going out on each sides of where the dry canal is going to be. Also, there's a proposal that the World Bank is funding called the Mesoamerican Biological Corridor, which these canals would totally cut through this biological corridor, which is suspect anyway because of World Bank funding.
Now, wait a minute. I just slow it down a little bit. Because when you say development, of course, I mean, you just said there's going to be development happening. And a lot of people would think that's great, of course. I'm not one of them. But just slow it down a little bit so people get a picture. So I get a picture. Maybe other people are understanding fine.
Well, what we're talking about, for example, the Dry Canal Mega Project on the Isthmus of Tehuantepec in Mexico, which is in Oaxaca, includes 147 different development projects. And this is an area that right now contains the most biodiverse and pristine rainforest in Mexico, is home to 25 different indigenous communities of 5 distinct languages. It's an incredibly culturally and biologically rich region. Mm-hmm. And what they want to do is mow down the forest, put in this dry canal, and once you get that type of transportation infrastructure, that then invites all kinds of other industries like maquiladora sweatshops, oil refineries, smelters, industrial shrimp farms, industrial forestry plantations, which could potentially be genetically engineered trees, and on and on and on. I mean, this basically what you're talking about is the dry canal, and then hundreds of kilometers in both directions will be negatively impacted by the other industries that will be included in that mega project.
Mm-hmm. So basically, a lot of the stuff that we know is like a paving over the world, even if it's not actually, it's concrete. It's that same sense.
Right, and what Fox has done is proposed Plan Puebla Panama, which starts in Puebla, Mexico, and then continues all the way down to the Panama Canal. And what that will be doing is linking up these canals with another type of transportation infrastructure. And
so it's like paving over all of Central America in.
You could actually say that, yeah, because it will be super highways that will be coming through. And Plan Puebla Panama has three major goals. The first one is to increase the transportation and industrial infrastructure in the region, improving the capacity for export industries. Two, it will catalyze a shift of the region's economy from agriculture to assembly plant sweatshops and manufacturing. And three, expand private control over the vast natural resources in the region. Land privatization is a key to all these goals and kind of underpins the PPP. Mm-hmm. What is going to be happening with this land privatization, one of the scariest things that's going on, although there's almost every aspect of this is very scary, but the indigenous people and poor rural campesinos will be moved off their land and sent into cities to presumably work in the sweatshops that are going to be created for them to give them employment. So at a very low rate of pay. It's not necessarily that the people need jobs, but it's not necessarily are these the best jobs for people to have. And there's also a lot of question, too, who is going to be getting any of the good-paying jobs anyway.
Yeah, and who makes the profits from this company. So it's things going from bad to worse, basically, in that part of the world. What do you, you say Fox is proposing this. Is this already in the works, or you say in the World Bank and IMF loans are to come? Is there any possibility of it being stopped?
Oh, there's definitely possibilities to stop it. They're looking at the World Bank to fund it. They're looking at the Inter-American Development Bank, the Central American Development Bank, and, of course, lots and lots of private corporations. But they have very little of this funding actually secured. So we have a huge opportunity to stop this before it is definite, before it is finalized. And in particular, if we can stop the transportation corridors, then we effectively stop the rest of the development, because they aren't going to put in sweatshops if they don't have the ports and the highways and so forth. Mm-hmm. So that is our goal at this point, is to get in there, and working with the communities that are down there to stop these things. And that's been a real key, is that the communities that are down there, in particular an organization called USAZONI, which is the Union of Indigenous Communities in the Northern Zone of the Isthmus, which is in Oaxaca, Mexico, have been working against that dry canal for a long time, and we've been trying to help them in any way we can. The Rama communities and ethnic communities in southern Atlantic Nicaragua have now started coming out against the dry canal proposed for that region, so we've been trying to help them, and in particular trying to link indigenous communities with other indigenous communities so that they can, you know, educate each other on the impacts. People who've already experienced the impacts can say, this is what you can expect from this. And that we feel is really important, that kind of indigenous to indigenous connection, because we as gringos can't go down there and say, you know, here's what's going to happen, you know, with any real credibility. But certainly other indigenous people can.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's really good work. Go ahead, Oren.
Well, I just wanted to say already there is a lot of resistance, as Ann mentioned, to Sisoni and the Isthmus of Tehuantepec. Now the Rama and ethnic communities in Nicaragua are coming together. When Fox announced this plan and it became widely known, the Zapatistas were from Chiapas were marching to Mexico City this spring, and one of the cries of the Zapatistas was, the Isthmus is not for sale. And a lot of people would think that, you know, if when they revolted on the day that NAFTA went into effect, they actually weren't revolting so that they would have the right to work in sweatshops someday. And when shortly thereafter, over 100 different organizations in Central America and Mexico from civil society met in Tapachula in Chiapas, right on the Guatemalan border, to pledge resistance to this. Next month in Chela, Guatemala, will be sort of the same repeat of the meeting with civil society, more members of civil society in Central America getting together. On October the 1st in Washington, D.C., we and other groups organized many different NGOs, I believe 21 different NGOs in the United States, to come together to discuss, you know, to be filled in on what's going on and be aware that this was going to be happening and what we in the North can do in support of our sisters and brothers down in Central America. So there's now a national coalition forming up in the United States, plus all the resistance that's beginning to take shape in Central America. Mm-hmm. And along with everything else, to really put things into a little bit more perspective, that everybody knows about the Free Trade Area of the Americas. This is not a trade agreement. What the PPP is a development plan. So even if the FTAA would be stopped, we believe the PPP will continue unless, you know, of course, people rise up and speak out against it. So, but what's coming along with this is a lot of militarization right now. We've been seeing the militarization having, especially after September the 11th, there's been more militarization in Chiapas. The United States has signed, and this isn't necessarily per se after September the 11th, but the United States signed an agreement with Guatemala to deploy 12,000 troops there to do joint exercises. We believe in Honduras, the military, U.S. military base is becoming, I believe, more fortified, or there's more activity around that. In El Salvador, the United States has set up a base. In Nicaragua right now, there's a huge, or not a huge, but there's a number of military, U.S. military personnel, which are getting ready, I guess, to be around for the elections that are coming up next month in Nicaragua, and trying to send a message to the people of Nicaragua that you better vote the right way or we're going to come back in. Already, we believe in December of this year that the U.S. military has proposed a humanitarian aid effort, and it's very ironically this humanitarian aid is going to be right in the area of where the dry canal is going to go through Nicaragua. And all this leads to, you have Plan Puebla Panama, and where does it end? Right where Plan Colombia starts. So there is, we believe there are many interconnections toward this, because if you are going to have free trade and this type of economic globalization that's going on, the only way to stabilize areas are to put in a lot of military, and that's one of the signs that we're seeing right now.
Again, I'm having a reaction to even when you say free trade, because the language has been turned so upside down. And upside down and backwards. So things that used to have positive meanings now have negative meanings. And I'm saying this because there might be some people in the audience that don't know what the FTAA is, don't know, you know, what these things mean. And those of us who've been around really looking deeply into situations, as you have, see what these things actually mean to people's lives and to the environment. And what you're talking about is not surprising, and I didn't know most of it. I didn't know that there was even more militarization and even more privatization. I mean, basically taking the land, getting the land away from people and doing things for the profits of some corporations. I want to remind people that my guests are Ann Peterman, who's a development director, and Oren Langell, who's the coordinator of ACERSA, Action for Community and Ecology in the Regions of Central America. and they're based in Vermont. Did I pronounce that right?
Acerca.
Acerca.
Okay. So are there a particular corporations that are involved in this plan?
Well, that's what we're in the process of researching. Certainly there are. We are looking into finding out who they are. It appears that Citibank will be very much involved. They just purchased Banamex, which is a major bank in Mexico, which is certainly going to be involved in funding the dry canal projects. So we're looking more into finding out those connections. Usuzoni has told us that International Paper is involved in funding some of the dry canal in Mexico, some of the dry canal projects in Mexico. And that's not too surprising, because what we've found out and through World Rainforest Movement is when you bring in these maquiador sweatshops, you need packaging for all the products to go out. And for packaging, you need raw materials such as pulp and paper. And
just that one thing is just breaks my heart is packaging. Just that one thing. All this needless use of resources and stuff to clutter up the world, it's just so sad.
Yeah. Well, it's especially troubling when you think about the fact that International Paper is one of the biggest pushers in the world of genetically engineered trees, which are hugely devastating. That's a campaign that I've also been working on, is genetically engineered trees. So if they start putting in genetically engineered tree plantations in Mexico and Central America to provide the pulp and paper for these sweatshops, you're going to see more and more deadly impacts toward the forest there. You know, not just the logging and the replacement by plantations, but also infecting the forest down there with the genetic pollution from these genetically engineered tree plantations. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just on and on and on. It's hard to imagine that people can come up with plans that are this horrible, but they do. So that's what we're in the process of working on. Again, if we can stop the transportation corridor and stop that from happening, then we can stop these other projects.
Mm-hmm. And it really is a matter of saving the planet. Well, the planet will probably go on, but the planet as we know it and all the living beings on it. I mean, it's that serious, as I know you know, but I just want to underline it. And you're doing all this this really great work. And I wonder if you want to tell me about some other of your projects, or you want to stay on this subject of this particular PPP plan.
Well, maybe a little bit more about PPP. I just wanted to totally agree with you that the way that the shape of the planet is going right now, and that things are getting so bad, and with Plan Pueblo Panama, it will probably be one of the ruinations of biodiversity of the whole entire region if it's allowed to succeed, and we will lose a tremendous amount of indigenous culture. This is almost like the final colonization now of Central America, and we will see indigenous culture and maybe some wisdom along the way of how to save the planet. And I believe that this has been called a PPP, a counterinsurgency plan, also because it is so antithetical to some of the indigenous beliefs, like the Zapatistas, who believed in, you know, in sovereignty, believe in their autonomy, believe in the collective use of land. And this, as I said, is antithetical to all of this, and could be sending a message through all the indigenous people through Central America that, you know, that your way of life is bad. You must now succumb to this great capitalist model of economic globalization.
Well, and the thing is that as indigenous people know so well, and we're and people with economic power seem to be slow in getting, is that it's all connected. And it's always, there's no way that we're not affected, that we being those people who aren't indigenous people. I mean, I say what you were talking about gringos earlier. I mean, there's certainly all kinds of people, all kinds of places, but that particular, to get the connectedness of everything, and that we live in this web of life, and it's just not sustainable to go on this way, either physically or spiritually or emotionally or any kind of way.
And just to talk a little bit more about the biodiversity of Central America, I don't think a lot of people realize how critical that isthmus is biologically. Nicaragua contains the largest primordial rainforest north of the Amazon. Honduras has extensive rainforest. Mexico, that part of southeastern Mexico, has the largest, most intact rainforests in Mexico, in North America, tropical rainforests anyway. And the whole isthmus is a critical migration corridor. You know, it connects North and South America with this very tiny strip of land. So that makes it very key for the migration of species, in particular songbirds. You know, if we in the United States like the songbirds that we have in our backyards, we need to start thinking about Central America and protecting the forests there. Because if those forests are gone, the birds can't migrate anymore, you know, and we'll stop seeing the songbirds that we love so much that have to get down to Central America and South America in the wintertime. So it's really important biologically.
And already there's so few birds. I mean, I guess the skies used to be filled with birds not so long ago, and now if we see a few, it's a big deal.
Right, and it's also critical to save the forests here because, you know, it's also interconnected. And hopefully people, as we move into this this new century, that people will start getting this before it's too late. Because I think we are at a really critical juncture of the humanity not realizing what we really have. We live on this beautiful, you know, planet, and it could be such a wonderful place to live. And I think the people in the United States after September the 11th, you know, are now having to reevaluate this a little bit more, and hopefully there can be some more dialogue going on with people that we can start really debating what's going on in the world and do it in a logical fashion and really get it to some kind of an analysis instead of what we're constantly being programmed on with mainstream media.
Mm-hmm. Since you've brought up September 11th a couple of times, I'd like to know, as I'm interested, since I live in this special place of Berkeley, which is far from perfect, but it's, you know, there's a lot of people who are really value peace and justice more than they want war. But I don't know what it's like in the rest of the country. Do you want to comment anything about Vermont or you've been traveling? Have you been traveling around the United States?
We haven't been traveling too much, but, you know, Vermont, again, is another isolated sort of pocket of progressive activity. But even there, you know, the number of flags and flag waving has been pretty phenomenal. In Burlington, you know, we've been seeing incidents of violence against anti-war protesters. And I mean, if that's in Vermont, I can only take that as an indication of what's going on elsewhere, which would be even worse.
Can you say a little bit more about that? Just what do you mean, incidents of violence against anti-war protesters?
There was a debate at the UVM campus, University of Vermont campus, and one of our campaigners was spit on there. There was an incident the next day. One activist was in the community. What was he doing? Selling his papers, I believe, and was slapped across the face, his glasses broken. You know, so things, I think it is getting more heated out there. There have been silent vigils every night in front of the Unitarian Church in Burlington, and they've been getting a lot of threats and people yelling at them in cars. And as I say, if that's in Burlington, I can only take that as an estimate that things are worse elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. And what we have really decided to focus on with the Circa is redoubling our commitment to work for global justice on all of this. We believe that there's never going to be peace unless there's global justice and people actually looking at the big picture. I think a lot of us are getting very tired that every 10 years something major war comes along or whatever. And I think it's time that we all start thinking about what this means to be living on the planet at this day and age. And that's why we're working for global justice. And the campaigns that we're talking about working down in Central America, the people down there have been in war for a long time. And sometimes it's shooting, sometimes it's not. But the United States policy has devastated that region from the 60s to the 70s when there were revolutions or people were trying to take control of their own destiny. Death squads came up. United States policy was involved. Over a quarter of a million people were killed in those regions, and basically to set up neoliberal governments so things like Plan Pueblo Panama can go ahead today as it is. So that's why we think it's very important to work for peace and global justice at the same time.
Are there organizations in the United States working on this issue? I mean, it's amazing to me. This is the first that I've heard about it.
On Plan Pueblo Panama, well, we had about 21 different organizations that came to the meeting we organized in Washington, D.C., but I'll try to go off quickly some of the groups. Mexico Solidarity Network, CISPAS, Nicaragua Network, NISCUA, Global Exchange, And I'm trying to think
there,
a lot.
There are many, many, many. But yeah. We've been meeting with a lot of different groups here in the Bay Area, getting them informed and involved. And, I mean, we've really just started this not very long ago, and it's growing by leaps and bounds. So I can only imagine, you know, in 6 months from now, we'll have a huge national coalition opposing this. So that's what we're working toward.
And, of course, part of the dynamic of the bombing of Afghanistan, which is so horrible, and this anthrax business is that people can forget about the other issues that have been around, and it's actually the United States has been moving, and the corporations have been moving on all kinds of things around under this umbrella of defense, I mm-hmm. guess is what they call it.
Yes. Sure. It's been really horrifying, actually, to me to see the opportunism of corporations and the right wing and just saying, you know, ooh, here's this great opportunity to pass all of this horrible legislation and do all of these terrible things that we've been opposed for so long. But now that we have this media blitz of, you know, brainwashing, we can get all this stuff passed. And, you know, I just think it's really horrific, that kind of opportunism. I'm really appalled by it.
Definitely. Do you have, well, we just have a couple of minutes left, actually, and I wondered, you have really a nice newspaper, all kinds of nice written material here from Acerca Notes, and the organization is Action for Community and Ecology in the Regions of Central America. And maybe it's not too soon to urge people to get your pencils and paper. We're going to be giving contact information and anything else that you want to mention real quick.
Well, yeah. Our other campaigns that we have going on is a campaign about Plan Colombia and looking at what Plan Colombia is doing and tying it into what's going on throughout the region in terms of the Plan Puebla Panama, the militarization, the bombing of Vieques, the biodiversity issues, and the indigenous peoples issues, really taking a holistic perspective about the entire region from southeast Mexico through Colombia and trying to understand how everything interrelates in that region, including the free trade area of the Americas.
Well, there surely is more than enough to do.
Right. Should I give the contact information? Mm-hmm. So it's Acerca, A-C-E-R-C-A, and Post Office Box 57, Burlington, Vermont, 05402. You can reach us on phone at 802-863-0571, or you can reach us by email at acerca@sover.net.
And you can also check out our webpage for any of this information, which is really easy to remember. That's www.acerca.org.
Okay, that's acerca.org, acerca.org. And it's in Burlington, Vermont. The phone number is 802-863-0561.
0571.
Oh, oops, my bad. My aged eyes here, 0571.
It's our little type, too. I think we were putting too much information on one card.
Well, there's so much information that we need to get out, I can understand. So I want to thank you very much, Ann Peterman, Development Director of Acerca, and Oren Langell, Co-Coordinator. Thanks very much. And
thank you,
Sue. Appreciate it. And thank you, everybody that's listening.
Yeah. And my name's Sue Supriano. Indeed, thanks for listening.